All right. Okay, apologies for the delay. We just had a technical glitch, but we're on now. So good evening. Welcome to tonight's meeting of Kingborough Council on Monday the 20th of April 2026. Welcome to those members who are in the public gallery this evening. Could I please ask that you make sure that your mobile phones are turned onto silent. A time being now 5:33pm, I officially declare the meeting open. Council now operates under the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2025, and under these I'm required to advise you that A, an audio or audiovisual recording is being made of the meeting, B, all persons attending the meeting are to be respectful of and considerate towards other persons attending the meeting, and C, language and conduct at the meeting that could be perceived as offensive, defamatory or threatening to a person attending the meeting or listening to the recording is not acceptable. The audio recording of council meetings is made publicly available on our website and meetings are live streamed on YouTube. I'll now ask staff to confirm that the audio recording has started. Yes. Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Our attendees this evening are myself, Councillor Reid, the Deputy Mayor, Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Dean, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Richardson and Councillor Street. From our staff this evening, we have the CEO, Mr Stewart, Director of People and Finance, Mr Spinks, Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr Smee, Director of Environment, Development and Community Services, Mrs Shakuti, our Lead Strategic Planner, Mr Stander, Communications Lead, Ms Adams and Executive Assistant, Mrs Morton. We have two apologies this evening, one from Councillor Bain and the other from Councillor Fox. Takes us to page one, confirmation of minutes, that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting Number 6 held on the 8th of April 2026 be confirmed as a true record. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved Councillor Cordova and seconded the Deputy Mayor. All those in favour? Against, motion is carried. On page two, workshops held since the last council meeting. We had a workshop last Monday, the 13th of April, in relation to two subjects, Kingston Park and also fees and charges. Declarations of interest. Does any councillor have an interest they would like to declare? No, thank you. And transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed session or closed into open session? No, thank you. Takes us to questions without notice from the public. If any member of the public wishes to ask a question, please come forward and to the lectern.
Good evening. My name's Nicholas Booth from Longley. My question around the agent of change. And for context, my understanding of agent of change is this. The agent of change principle in planning means that a party introducing a new development is responsible for managing any impacts that it may have on existing lawful uses. It is commonly used to reduce conflict between new sensitive development and established activities. In practice, it shifts the burden of mitigation onto the new entrant rather than restricting long-standing uses. So my question is, could Council provide some general guidance on whether there is any scope within the Tasmanian planning scheme or state planning revisions to consider an agent of change principle, and what factors would be needed to be taken into account?
Mr. Stander.
Sorry for the sigh. thank you for the question. Look, I don't want to speak on behalf of Council, but I think that's most probably more a question for the Commission, and it's most probably something that would be interrogated through the public hearing process. So unfortunately, I won't be able to give you an answer today, but I'm equally happy to take that on notice.
Would it be possible for Council to receive informal advice or a briefing at some stage on how an agent of change approach might work in practice in planning and its effects?
Happy to take that on notice.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any further questions?
Good evening, Natisha Woodbridge. Natisha Knight, sorry, from Woodbridge.
I didn't think you changed your surname to Woodbridge.
No, just in case you don't know. I'm just going to go back to I know I've asked the questions before around Part 5 agreements, but I've just got a few more questions, if I may. What is the formula or framework that is used to calculate a biodiversity offset slash Part 5 agreement, and is this open to planning discretion, i.e. 2 hectares have been cleared, but a request for either 144,000 in a biodiversity offset's been requested, or 55 hectares put into a Part 5 agreement. Is this based on LUPA guidelines, or is it based on planning discretion?
Ms. Shakuti.
Through you, Mayor. Sorry, we're not meant to say that.
No, not, but that's okay. old habits are hard to break.
They really are. It's through the offset policy. Council's endorsed offset policy sets out the different ratios for determining the amount of offset that's required. It isn't straightforward, though, in terms of it does need to meet criteria in terms of the offset being proposed needs to be, one is differentiated by the value of the vegetation or the biodiversity value that was disturbed through or cleared through development, and then that then determines what ratio might apply. Now, the area that is selected also has to sufficiently be offsetting those values. So there might be different reasons why certain areas, for example, on a property are considered more high value than others, and it's not simply just down to those ratios. So it all interplays in terms of the value of the biodiversity that was and disturbed and the footprint of that, then the ratios, and then making sure whatever is then, if it's an on-site offset, is actually protecting a similar value. So, yeah, it's not straightforward in being able to answer that question, but it is in the our offset policy, and in terms of the values, that is determined through a qualified person assessing those values on site.
So planning discretion?
No. So a qualified person being an ecologist determining the values on site.
Second question.
Yep.
So while Council has previously refused to provide mapping of the Part 5 agreements on locality-based, citing privacy, when the Irene Inc. report came out, it clearly included some mapped examples and references of extensive use within Kingborough. Will Council now release the full extent of location of these agreements?
Ms. Shakuti.
We'd have to take that on notice, but what I will say is that the request was considered thoroughly, and we did seek advice from internal legal counsel about that, and it was determined that the privacy requirements did apply for that information, but we'll take that on notice.
Given Part 5 agreements are described as voluntary, what happens if a landowner refuses? Does that mean automatic DA refusal? And what is the process to remove or amend a Part 5 once on title?
Ms. Shakuti.
So under the scheme, the interim scheme as it stands, it is part of the planning assessment in terms of whether the scheme is the application is determined to meet the scheme requirements with for vegetation clearing in some zones. And if the vegetation overlay applies. What needs to be demonstrated is that it can be avoided, minimised or offset, and if the applicant is not willing to, it can't do that, well, sorry, if the application demonstrates that it can't be avoided or minimised and the applicant is not willing to enter into an offset, that will be considered at the time in terms of meeting the particular clause of the scheme and whether that vegetation approval, that development may or may not meet those requirements of that part of the scheme.
So if they refuse, it means a DA refusal?
I can't say categorically because To my knowledge, I've not come across that, so that would be something we'd have to consider at the time, but we do need to be able to demonstrate compliance with the scheme.
So, and then the second part of my question was, how, if somebody has one, how do they apply to remove that? Because it's supposed to be voluntary.
Ms. Cootie.
My understanding, and I might take this on notice as well, just to provide provide a certain answer, it would be a minor amendment or an application to amend the permit to not have that as your offset requirement.
Are there any further questions? Please come forward.
Hi, Tamika Adkins from Oyster Cove. On day 19 of the TPC hearings, the TPC, I believe it was Dan, not sure his last name, sorry, asked the consultant, Kate Heckelman, if she would be attending the hearings to answer landowners' questions about the proposed zone for their area. On two occasions when asked, she replied, yes, that was her intention. My question is, can Council please advise if the original cost of $152,000 included the time allocated for TPC hearings? And if not, will Kingborough Council be paying for Ms. Heckelman to attend the hearings?
Ms. Shakuti.
Yes, it did include that cost to for the consultants to attend the hearings.
My next question is, the TPC have been informed of the Kingborough Council's zoning risk appetite and the direction to apply and the direction to apply the least restrictive zone where two or more zones can be applied as their preferred position. Considering the consultant's report did not reflect either of these two things, what's being done to ensure the consultant now follows these directions in the hearings?
Ms. Shakuti.
My understanding and interpretation of that resolution of the council was that it wasn't to direct the consultant to do that. The consultant's report remains an independent report, and the planning authority advised the commission of that resolution in the cover letter when the report was submitted.
So is she not representing Kingborough Council with that report?
Ms. Shakuti.
The report was commissioned as an independent review, so she will be providing her opinion as the independent review. Planning officers will be in attendance, or planning officer will be in attendance, and will be providing, I suppose, planning authority advice. The additional layer to that is that if there are questions that actually require the planning authority as council to answer, for example, in more detail about the risk appetite, then that can be brought back to council, or staff can consult with the elected members about providing a response to a direction if it arises.
So just so I'm clear, she'll be defending her position of the report, because she did also make it clear much before then that they wouldn't be changing it. So she'll be defending that position that she's put forward those zones for those reasons. The TPC asked her to be at the hearings, if she would be there, so she could then answer landowners' questions as to why that they should be zoned in that area. Kingborough Council have a position where, if possible, and two zones are applied, we should be looking at the least restrictive. But who will be defending that?
Ms. Shakuti.
So Kingborough, the Planning Authority, have asked the Planning Commission, when they're considering all of the evidence, that is the Planning Authority's position generally. I think the word defending is probably not quite the right word in terms of how the consultant will be answering questions. The review is the starting point of the consultant's independent review. I imagine if during hearings there's different evidence that is presented and the consultant is asked, based on hearing further evidence, what their their view is post hearing that information, they may change their position. But again, it will be as the consultant.
Any further questions?
Mark Dunellan from Huntingfield. Mayor, this might be related to an item on the agenda, but I'll let you be the judge. past workshop discussed options for the future use of vacant lots at Kingston Park, and I'm sure I'm not the only one that's very interested to know of any changes there or any news. Can we possibly have a bit of that unpacked, like what happened in the meeting, and is this something we can discuss with our favourite councillors?
The CEO. And we're not even going to ask you to name your favourite councillors. CEO.
Thank you. Good question. At this stage, it was an information gathering exercise for the consultant involved, so they came to talk to councillors about the types of aspirations that the councillors have for the site. So the consultant has been doing some wider engagement, talking to different people with different perspectives on potential. This includes industry and other uses of the space so that we can gain the maximum amount of information. They will then go away and do further work and come back to council with some thoughts on a way forward with Kingston Park. So it's really not at the stage where there's anything to share at this point about what it's going to be or where to from here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? No? Thank you very much. We had, still on page two, questions on notice from the public. We had one on policies from Ms. Karen Groves with a response from Mr. Mackey. And if anybody does wish to submit a question on notice, they can do so by completing the relevant form on our website or by emailing kc@kimbra.tas.gov.au. Takes us to questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor wish to ask a question without notice? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Just to follow up on the question I asked last council meeting, and thank you very much, staff, for the response on that. Just to further clarify, sorry, and I should open it up, it's the one on Apollo Drive, Spring Farm and the...
Vegetation clearing,
yes, yep. Under the Forestry Practices Act. So what now can that land be used for? Will it be revegetated? Do we have any... understanding or further conversations in regards to that, please?
Mr. Stander.
Good question. so the Forest Practices Plan, as you note from my response, is essentially for grazing purposes, but council also currently have application for rezoning and subdivision of that land, which obviously creates some technicalities which we still need to resolve. So, unfortunately, I don't have an answer for you in relation to that, but the official answer is, according to the forest practices, it should be utilised for grazing, but we also know that we've got application for residential use in the pipeline. So that's most probably an area where we most probably need to get some legal advice on how to proceed with that application at this point in time.
Any further questions without notice from councillors? No. Right, moving on. Questions on notice and councillors. As we've just heard, there was one question on notice from Councillor Midgley in relation to vegetation clearing at Spring Farm with a response from Mr. Stander. Open session of council now adjourns at 5:51 p.m. and the planning authority commences at 5:51 p.m. Takes us to page 4, item 12.1, PSA 2026-1, proposed amendment to the Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme 2015 to rezone land and for a site-specific qualification at 11 Spring Farm Lane, Kingston, Spring Farm Village Shopping Centre, with a recommendation on page 15. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in Councillor Dean and a seconder in the Deputy Mayor. Councillor Dean.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm happy to move this one. I think the officer has done an excellent job of explaining what's a fairly straightforward process. Essentially, what it's seeking to do is to undertake a planning scheme amendment, and just noting that we're only at the start of that process outlined on page 5 of the agenda. It's related to the land which is
going to become the Spring Farm Village Shopping Centre opposite Bunnings, which I'm sure we're all now familiar with. And the amendment seeks to essentially do two things, bring the land under one uniform zone, which is the commercial zone, as well as introduce a site-specific qualification to allow a bottle shop to be used as a discretionary use under the scheme. Both of these are actually what would already be planned for under the statewide planning scheme, but as obviously everyone's aware, we quite haven't got to that scheme just yet. So it's just bringing forward what would come, what would be allowed under the new scheme anyway. So I have no issues with moving this on to the next stage, and I'm happy to move the report.
Thank you, Councillor Dean. Further contributions? Deputy Mayor.
I just had a couple of questions. Why now? Why did they not rezone these before they started building?
It's mostly a question for the applicant, but look, my understanding is because Council did recommend the commercial zone for the entire site, and as Councillor Dean pointed out, the site-specific qualification, if you actually look at the new scheme, a bottle shop would be allowed within that zone. So I guess, like everybody else, we were hoping that the new planning scheme would be in place. Unfortunately, timing didn't work out, so they did approach me, and they've we're looking at solutions to bring it forward, and this is one way of doing it. So I guess it's most probably appropriate for me to indicate this is not the only application that we have. We might have a couple where applicants can't really wait for the new planning scheme anymore, and in this particular instance, they're obviously busy with the construction, so it's important to get moving with this one, and they were happy to go through the process.
That's great that you've been able to provide a solution for them in this instance.
Any further discussion? Councillor Ntoli.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, it's a great initiative. It makes sense to put it all into one zone, and if we don't, they will lose two major tenants who can't operate without this change. And so all we're doing is just bringing in line, as Mr. Stander said, with what the planning scheme allows, and I fully support it.
Thank you, Councillor Ntoli. Any further discussion? Councillor Dean, did you want to sum up? If not, okay, I'm going to put the recommendation. It's moved by Councillor Dean and seconded by Councillor Gladewright. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Planning Authority now adjourns at 5:55pm and open session of Council recommences at 5:55pm. On page 18, petitions still being actioned. There are no petitions still being actioned. And on the same page, petitions received in the last period. There was a petition received in relation to excessive noise from the Salty Dog at Kingston Beach with a recommendation on page 15. And I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. A mover in Councillor Ntoli and a seconder in the Deputy Mayor. Councillor Ntoli.
Thanks, Mayor. We're here to receive a petition from around 43 signatories who all live in and around the Salty Dog Hotel who would like Council to investigate a noise complaint. Mm. And I understand the recommendation is that the Council will receive the report and just go through the usual checks and balances. If I may ask a few questions, which we don't normally do for petitions, but given the public interest, I'd like to be able to ask a few questions as
sure.
well.
Yep.
Does the Salty Dog have any restrictions on its DA or its licence in terms of noise levels, or will the EMPCA or environmental regulations apply?
Who am I directing this to? Ms. Shakuti? No. Ms. Shakuti.
Thank you. My understanding is no, it doesn't have limits in the permit. That's from my knowledge as I sit here. So there are legislative requirements that do relate to amenity and noise emissions, etc., from all premises, whether it's commercial or residential, and Council will review that in accordance with those and provide a report. I think to note, we acknowledge that the Salty Dog is, an establishment that provides a lot of I suppose, a joy to our community in terms of being able to attend and enjoy the music. We also have people who are residents, and we will work through the legislation in the most pragmatic and practical way we can for those involved.
Councillor Antolli.
My understanding is that under current legislation, the limit is around 55 decibels. Is that the case, and would that apply to them?
Ms. Shakuti.
I am uncertain of that. Noise regulations in Tasmania do have some ambiguity, so I can't. I'd have to take that on notice.
Yeah, because my understanding is
that,
thank you, Mayor. Sorry, my understanding is that 55 decibels is pretty equivalent to a general conversation that you and I are having right now, and I don't see how anyone could operate a live band at that level. So I'm just trying to understand what sort of discretions do we have, what is considered fair noise for a live band in a residential setting and what is not. Because, like you said, we want to weigh up the natural amenity of the residents who I've spoken to, and I've also spoken to the management, and we don't want to see a lawful, valuable business die on the vine because of this change that could be applied by council. So where is the perfect balance? Do you have an understanding in terms of decibel levels? What is the right, what is the required, or what guidance do we have from the state?
Ms. Shakuti.
I think simplifying it down to decibel level, while it is one indicator, isn't... in terms of noise emissions, always the best way to look at things. Without going into technical detail, noise is a complex issue, and it depends on a range of things in terms of duration, reasonableness of the potential impact, etc. So a lot of things have to be considered under the guidelines, and council will do that methodically and in consultation both with the owners of Salty Dog and the residents.
Councillor Antolli.
Fair to say that staff will do their measurements, they will have a recommendation, they'll come back with the full suite of controls, and then we as council decide what those controls are going forward for this establishment. Is that what happens?
Ms. Shakuti.
I don't think it will be as simple again as that, in terms of we will take measurements and provide a recommendation. We will assess the entire situation in accordance with the applicable guidance from the state and provide a recommendation. We don't know what that will be, and it may or may not include limits. We really just have to move through this and assess the situation to be able to provide a recommendation.
Councillor Antolli.
I'm just trying to understand what's the natural justice for the two parties here. How does the process work? So it sounds a bit vague from what you're telling me. Is that the way the system's set up? It is a bit vague?
Ms. Shakuti.
It can be in relation to noise emissions, and the reason for that is that there's multiple factors that need to be considered, and there's multiple mechanisms in which it could be managed, and what we need to be able to do is have some time to review that and provide the most reasonable way forward for both the business and the residents.
Councillor Antolli.
Another question I have is that I've spoken to the management of the Salty Dog, and they've had apparently, allegedly, some initial conversations with council staff where the number of 55 decibels was tabled, which for them, and I think for most venues that want to promote light music, is completely unacceptable, because everyone knows that a live band is going to be more than the conversation levels that you and I are having right now. Can you comment on that?
The CEO is wanting to comment on something?
Chomping at the
end. Yeah, thank you. Look, I think there's obviously some more work that needs to be done here, and that includes working both with the venue and also with the residents. There may be some things that can be done that mitigate some of the noise emission off-site into the neighbouring environment that will help both ensure the activity to continue and the business to continue to deliver, you know, what is a really great thing for the community in terms of delivering live music, and we all know about the positivity that can bring. At the same time, we want people to be able to enjoy living in their homes and not having sort of unreasonable levels of disruption to that. So we need a little bit of time to work through that, and there's some of these questions that we probably can't answer tonight in terms of specific levels of decibel. And where you measure that, how you measure that is always contextual as well. So we're seeking expert advice. So we've engaged with the team at City of Hobart who deal with live music more than we do to get some advice about how they deal with it in their context. And we'll make sure that we're getting the right advice and taking a sensible approach here, because ultimately we want to meet the needs of both groups involved here. We want the venue to continue to be able to do their thing, and we want our residents to be able to enjoy, a great living environment like we like to create in Kingborough. So this is why we're referring it back to staff, because there's still some more work to be done. I've had a briefing that goes through the significant amount of work that's already gone into this, and there'll be more that's needed to get to a sensible solution at the end. So we'll refer this through to staff, and then we'll make sure that we're working with all parties to make sure we're getting a good outcome at the end of this.
Ms. Chakuti.
In that the 55 was provided as an example, not as something that will be implemented at this stage, and also to be aware that the measurements of that is not at the venue either. But again, as the CEO said, there's multiple things that we need to look at, including what mitigation is available. So we're just not in a position to give any sort of definitive answers on this at the moment.
Councillor Antali.
Thank you. Yeah, I think the CEO's response and Ms. Chakuti's response gives some comfort, I think, to both parties that we take a neutral position on this, that we don't want to see a valuable business suffer, and at the same time we do want to respect the residents, and we do understand how noise levels could be low, but the bass travels through the air, penetrates a house through its walls and accentuates the noise amenity inside the house at levels that are sometimes hard to understand, and you're right about the science of all that. I understand how, unfortunately, the media has sort of latched onto this and demonised our residents, and the conversations that we've initially had with staff has spooked the management, and they've pumped $4.7 million into an incredibly valuable asset for our community. And I think it's a case of teething issues for an improved use, that everyone needs to calm down, get to their back into their corner, live their lives. Let us try and sort this out. We'll get to a win-win, hope and pray. And I do appreciate the CEO dealing with councils that have a bit more experience than this with us. And it's exciting that we've got this experience. And hopefully when the next venue starts up, we'll be a bit more able to manage the PR on it. But thanks for taking the petition and the answering the questions.
Not sure that the salty dog would be that excited about this experience.
Yes, fair enough.
So I'm just going to let that one slip.
Viva Free Enterprise.
Councillor Street, and then the Deputy Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, we are only noting the petition, so I'm going to be brief. But I think it's important that I put on the public record the fact that, in my view, the only solution to this problem is one where live music continues at the Salty Dog and at Kingston Beach. For as long as I have been alive, there has been live music at that site in one form or another, and that should continue, in my view. It's a point of personal pride that we have the precinct that we do down there in our municipality, and long may it continue. And the only acceptable solution, in my view, is one that sees live music on that site continue. And I'd be very disappointed with any other outcome. So while we are just noting the petition, I think given the great public interest in this matter, I think it's important that I put that very firm view on the record. Recognise that there are concerns, and I think all credit to the Salty Dog team for the way in which they've approached this matter publicly, and they obviously want to be good neighbours as well, and I think that's fantastic. And so I appreciate them putting that view, but as I say, my view is certainly that the only appropriate solution here is one that sees live music at that site continue, and that's certainly what I'll be pushing for.
Thank you, Councillor Strait. Any further discussion? The Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. Yes, so we are only noting petitions, so we don't usually ask questions and have contributions at this point in time. But I just want to find out, when can we expect the report, please?
CEO.
Thank you. Good question. I did ask that question myself.
Is that why it's a good question? Because you'd already thought of it.
Absolutely. look, we're hoping to have a response to a meeting in May, which one I'll just need to confirm with the team depends on the work that needs to be done here. But look, this is something we're needing to move on, obviously. It's a live issue both for the venue and for our community. So it's intended that it'll come back to council in May.
So I know that we...
Deputy Mayor.
I know that we let the petitioners know, but will we also let the owners of the Salty Dog know when it's coming so that they can come and watch the debate?
Look.
CEO.
Look, I hope through this process we are actively engaging with all parties, and that's not just a one-off notification that it's going to be coming to council. There should be dialogue as we go through the process. In saying that, like any item, it'll be listed on the council agenda as well. So there's the opportunity not just for the interested parties to be aware, but also our wider community.
Thank you. Any further contributions? Councillor Antoli, did you want to sum up? Thank you. I'll put the recommendation then. It's moved by Councillor Antoli and seconded by Councillor Gladright. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Takes us to page 18, Officers' Reports to Council. Item 15.1, Disability Inclusion and Access Advisory Committee Minutes from the 18th of February 2026 meeting, with a recommendation on page 19. Looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Mover in Councillor Cordova and a seconder in the Deputy Mayor. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. So this report is about acknowledging the minutes of the Disability Inclusion and Access Advisory Committee meeting from the 18th of February, but importantly, it raises the concern around the site at Hutchins Street, the crossing, due to restricted parking at the U3A Kingborough site. Importantly, on that 18th of February meeting, the Advisory Committee adopted a motion that said that Council investigates a formalised pedestrian crossing on Hutchins Street, Kingston vicinity, U3A, Kingborough and Library Tasmania. And the committee noted that more people are crossing Hutchins Street due to restricted parking at that U3A Kingborough site. Council officers can investigate options to improve pedestrian safety in that area, noting that the road currently has a 40 km an hour speed limit. An existing pedestrian refuge and the preferred pedestrian priority treatment, a raised wombat crossing, may be challenging to install at this location. It's obviously an area that has a significant community interest. I do have a question about the scope of the investigation that Council will undertake, noting the recommendation there is that in addition to noting the minutes, we'll also investigate options to improve pedestrian safety on Hutchins Street, and including the feasibility for a pedestrian priority crossing vicinity U3A, Kingborough and the Kingston Library. Where does Channel Court and the entrance into Hutchins Street come into play with this? My question is, I've often kind of pondered the idea of, because there's a lot of traffic at busy times coming out of Channel Court trying to turn right, when in fact there's a roundabout, not 100 metres down near the police station, that tends to incentivise the behaviour for people to kind of zip out as fast as they can, and it's right there where that pedestrian crossing is. So I just feel like that area, I've often wondered whether or not a no right turn out of Channel Court would make traffic then go to the roundabout. Anyway, neither here nor there for me to say what's a good idea or not, but My question is, will this investigation involve Channel Court and that that area?
We don't have our Director of Engineering Services with us this evening, so we can certainly ask him to note, to go back and look at the comments that you've made. It is certainly a challenging area, that whole, I know, just trying to, for our own staff here, trying to cross the road to get over to Channel Court when they're going over to purchase lunch or whatever. It can be very, very difficult as a pedestrian, and the concerns of the Access Committee are that there are quite a few people who are the patrons of U3A or the members of U3A who are, you know, in a senior age group, some of them reliant on mobility devices and so on, and so it is very challenging if they've got to park over there now and try and traverse that street, particularly at peak times. So I know that the members of U3A are actually also looking at other alternatives for how they might get some action for this, because there is, of course, the opportunity for the Education Department to actually put some money into upgrading that car park that has long been neglected, which is how this whole situation started. So certainly this is just one option that we have available to us at the moment in order to try and ensure the safety of those community members, but I'll certainly pass on to Mr. Mackey the comments that you've raised, because that whole area, as there's been more both pedestrian and vehicle activity in, around it, is becoming very, very difficult.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor, I'll just conclude my remarks by saying that I think there's a dual opportunity here. Firstly, I fully agree with the sentiments you raised around the upgrade of that car park and the angst, the significant angst that's caused that community. But also, I think if we can look at the more systemic issues around mobility around mobility in that area, hopefully we can solve the U3A car park issue as well as improve connectivity and mobility along Hutchins Street. So a good opportunity, and I just want to take a moment to especially thank the members of that committee for all the great work that they're doing. Thank you.
Thank you. It's very timely because we have a meeting on Wednesday, so I will pass that on and just add that we now have a full contingent on that committee, which is great. So they fill the room here when we have them. We've got a lot of new members as well as some continuing ones, and we have a really good breadth of different lived experiences of a variety of different disabilities that are represented amongst that group. So it's been, it's very useful, and we hope to continue some of the work that we've been doing in the past for that committee. So thank you very much. Any further discussions? Deputy Mayor.
I just had a question. Why was this brought to us so late? Because this is from 18th February, this meeting.
Can't help you with that. I know that there have been some staffing changes with the administrative support provided to the committee, so that might have delayed it. Yeah. Any further discussion? If not, I'll put the recommendation. It was moved by Councillor Cordova and seconded by Councillor Glade-Wright. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. Takes us to page 26, item 15.2, financial report for March 2026, with a recommendation on page 29. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. We don't have Councillor Bain with us tonight. Someone else will have to do the Councillor Cordova. Thank you. And a seconder, Deputy Mayor. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. We're looking at the finance report for March 2026. The take-home messages are that the total income is $1.78 million over budget, and that's to do with a rates income is $123,000 under budget due to delays in receiving supplementary rates assessment from the Valuer General. Statutory fees and fines are $448,000 over budget. This is in a broader context of significant financial pressure that the Council is under, and I note the useful discussion that's been had around, I guess, preparing this Council for what is a largely uncertain geopolitical environment and with significant headwinds. Interest rates and geopolitical uncertainty and the like. I just wanted to, I guess, ask the question around, as as these things are changing, what contingency plans is Council putting in place to make sure that we are going to be able to weather the storm irrespective of whatever outcomes might emerge vis-a-vis interest rates and fuel costs and the like?
Mr. Spinks.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, there's a range of things that we've been doing. In terms of fuel supply, we've been ensuring that our tanks at our depot site have been replenished, and that's certainly been the case. In terms of our fuel usage, we're certainly encouraging our staff to undertake Teams meetings and other things rather than use council vehicles to go to meetings. It is fortunate that we're tracking ahead of budget at the moment. We have done some estimates around what the increase in fuel price may cost us. It's obviously those estimates are reliant upon what forecasts and assumptions we make in terms of what prices may reach. But at this stage, we're confident that in a broader budget context that we'll be okay, that it's not going to cause any untoward negative outcomes. Fuel but itself may well be negative, but in the whole budget context, I think we'll be okay. Yeah. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. CEO, did you want to add anything?
Probably just adding to Mr. Spinks's answers, we do have sort of contingency plans, especially in the areas where we use a lot of fuel, for how we might deliver services and when we might slow down activity in that space in order to make sure that we are reducing the cost to the organisation. I guess it's worth noting that if that happens, there will be a service impact to that. So we take that seriously, and we'll make decisions as we see what transpires, in particular relating to that fuel cost. We're also thinking about context, especially in terms of, for example, our depot workers, about how they get to work, so looking to putting in place carpooling and those types of things to both reduce the overall fuel consumptions across the state, but also to make sure we're looking after our people.
Further questions? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a question regarding the point, the loan interest is $57,904 under budget this month. I'm just wondering what that loan was referring to.
Mr. Spinks.
That's a good pick up. So we'll probably make an adjustment for that next month, but you might recall a couple of months ago we had a loan maturing, a $9.4 million loan, and we paid down $3 million of that. So we actually have a smaller loan balance right now than what we were budgeting for, and so we're making some interest cost savings. So we'll make an adjustment for that next month.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, that's good to hear. And also just noted in the report the large number of staff vacancies and number of consultants that we are using across different areas. I guess, is the intention to fulfil those roles? What's the long-term plan around consultants, and just some understanding around that, please?
The CEO.
Yeah, so use of consultants is normal within a business-as-usual environment, and in particular where you do have staff shortages or natural churn, the use of consultants to help fill workflows, especially in areas where we've got statutory timeframes, helps us continue to deliver that service and make sure that we're, meeting the expectations of our community as well as looking after the people that work here in terms of the work levels that they have. So I guess it's somewhat business as usual. I've been looking at turnover across the organisation. It's not beyond expectations of what normal looks like, but you do go through sort of peaks and troughs through time. So there are windows where you have less workforce than others, and so using consultants to help out through that time is something that I'd expect. So I guess in terms of the overall expenditure, those things largely net off. We're not holding vacancies for any particular purpose here. We're actively recruiting when we have vacancies in the organisation.
Councillor Midgley, anything further? I just had a question in relation to Kingborough Sports Centre fees, because they are contributing, the fitness centre memberships are $235,000 over budget to the year to date, and that just seems like an extraordinarily large influx of members to the fitness centre. I know we've upgraded our equipment and the class offerings and all that, but that's a lot of extra members. Is that correct? Mr. Smee.
Mayor, it's a combination of we had a significant downturn in membership post-COVID, so it's partly a post-COVID recovery in membership. You know, we dipped to below 500 members. Off the top of my head, we're now around 1,200. So there's a significant increase in membership that is a result of new equipment. There's been a really positive response to our extended opening hours. That's been really popular. And I suspect we under budgeted in terms of our expectations with respect to membership. We budgeted conservatively. We had hoped that we would get an uptick in relation to the extended opening hours, but it's been it's exceeded our expectations significantly.
Thank you. It's just interesting because there are, compared to 5 years ago, there are a lot more gym offerings in Kingston than probably ever before. And some of them are 24-hour ones. So it's great to see that there is that level of engagement from the community with what we're offering up there. I just didn't expect to see such a big uplift, but that's fantastic. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. You've sparked a question from me. I was very encouraged to hear what was just said. May I ask, what stops us from going 24/7 as well at the Kingborough Sports Centre?
Mr. Smee.
Nothing currently prevents us. We obviously have unstaffed hours now. We did a member survey in relation to the hours that they wanted, and certainly going to 10 p.m. and opening earlier was requested. We had almost no interest in going in that 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. time slot. We could do it if there was demand. There is potentially a higher risk in opening in those hours, but there's nothing stopping us beyond our own risk appetite.
Councillor Midgley.
Asked a question before, so it's a comment this time. If I can just make a comment.
No, you can get to ask another question.
Oh, I just want to make a comment,
okay,
if that's okay, because I asked a question, so I can.
Yeah. Sure.
Anyway, can I just make a comment? As a member of that gym, I feel like it is such a reflection of council, like it's a community-minded gym that covers inclusion for everybody, and I don't think I've ever been to a gym that just covers all of that. So I just want to say, you know, kudos to the staff there, because I think as well that helps in membership as well. And yeah, you go there and it's like you're the buzz of kind of Kingborough. It's like a gym for kind of everybody, not doing a plug or anything, but yeah, it really does do that, and the staff really have a big part in that.
Thank you. This has been a wonderful infomercial for the Kingborough Sports Gymnasium,
yeah.
And I would encourage anyone listening to get their memberships while they're hot. Okay, are there any further questions on the financial report, which we seem to have veered away from recently? No? Councillor Cordova, did you want to sum up? Thank you. I'll put the recommendation then, moved by Councillor Cordova and seconded by Councillor Glade-Wright. All those in favour? Against. Motion is carried. Takes us to the appendices on 15.3 with a recommendation on page 89. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved, Councillor Midgley. Seconded, Deputy Mayor. Any questions on the appendices?
I just had a question.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. Just a question in regards to Browns Road. Just any, how's that going? Any community feedback? Yeah,
we don't have the Director of Engineering Services with us this evening, but I'm sure the CEO can give us an update.
Yep, thank you. So From what I'm told, the project is progressing well in terms of the works undertaken, and that despite the fact that there is, I guess, a traffic impact from it, that's working well. We aren't seeing any alarming levels of congestion being caused or anything of that sort. So from my perspective, the project is progressing well, but we can arrange a more detailed update from the relevant director.
Thank you. Further questions? No. I'll put the recommendation then. Moved Councillor Midgley, seconded Councillor Gladright. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. Takes us to page 89, notices of motion. Councillor Cordova submitted a notice of motion headed Addressing the Housing Crisis in Kingborough. And there's an officer's response from Mr Stewart. It's moved by Councillor Cordova, and I'm looking for a seconder, please. And seconded Councillor Midgley. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Kingborough's strategic plan says that we expect that by 2053 there'll be nearly 10,500 more people living here, bringing our population to nearly 52,000 residents. And my question really that this report seeks to address is living where? Are they going to be living in granny flats and tiny houses on the urban fringe, or in recently subdivided lots where once stood productive farmland or remnant native vegetation? Or will they be living in a diverse housing stock close to existing activity centres and public transport, close to good schools and medical services, close to existing infrastructure with vibrant activity centres with vertical mixed use, gentle density, green corridors where nature is brought into the centre and where there is thriving biodiversity, bustling nightlife and commercially viable and sustainable businesses? So the genesis of this particular motion you see before you is because I've been ruminating on what has been achieved by the Kingborough Council's statement on housing in the 1,000 days since it was adopted. Since 2023, can we hand on heart say that it is easier to buy or rent in Kingborough, or is it more difficult? Is it more out of reach to everyday Tasmanians to live near the place they work? Are there more or fewer people in Kingborough sleeping in cars or couch surfing or on the public housing waiting list? At the last meeting of this council, I asked about Brighton City Council and Hobart City Council's targeted inner city housing supply incentive, so the two housing incentives initiated by those two councils. And specifically I asked, with all these other councils taking a lot of action on housing, what is Kingborough going to do about that, and will it become a main area of focus in the near term? And the answer provided was, and it's in the minutes, I guess the simple answer to that question is it will become a priority if council makes it one, end quote. And so today I'm asking my fellow councillors to make housing as a human right a priority for this council, to do more than what is in the Kingborough Statement on Housing, which has achieved little in the last 1,000 days. Now, we have a strategic plan, and some of our strategic priorities are that we're going, well, number one, helping our community stay safe, healthy and well-connected, growing together with well-planned infrastructure and spaces, caring for where we live and preparing for the future, fostering a welcoming, vibrant and thriving Kingborough, and that council is a desirable place to work. And the question becomes, how can we achieve any of those things if people can't afford to live and rent here? 60% of Kingborough residents who rent are in rental stress. You can buy a 16th century castle in Europe for some of the prices that we're seeing at Kingston Beach. And to me, trying to achieve our strategic plan when no individual on the median income can afford the median house in Kingborough, I think the failure is already there. And yes, we can say it's a federal government failure or a state failure, but the truth is that local government does have levers that we can pull. And any planning academic will tell you that local government plays a role in fixing housing crises. And the analogy here is that with respect to our strategic plan, imagine you had a business with a strategic plan and you say, we want to be a sustainable business, we want to treat the staff well, and we want to get more customers. Well, that's all well and good, but if there's a fire in your reception area, you're never really going to be able to have a sustainable business where you treat your customers well and treat your staff well. Whilst we have a housing crisis in Kingborough, how can we be an employer of choice when nobody can afford to live or rent here? How can we have a safe, healthy and well-connected community when there's increasing instances of homelessness in our midst? And a crisis demands an immediate response, not a response in 9 months, not a response after the next planning scheme is implemented. It's not okay to say, let's just wait for a more convenient season. Four out of five rentals in Tasmania are too expensive for a typical Tasmanian family. And the fact is, I'm not going to sit here and litigate all the facts that are in the report. I think one would be hard-pressed to pretend that we are not in crisis mode with respect to housing and rentals in Kingborough. But my understanding is that we should be prioritising areas where there is existing infrastructure, roads, schools, hospitals and pavements. That's the areas where we should be encouraging gentle density and making efforts to improve the housing stock and the housing diversity in those areas. Now, to address the officer's response in the report that says we should wait for a more convenient season, there's not enough resources and the time isn't right, I just ask the question, it's about priorities. Now, we've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars at this council addressing issues relating to the landscape conservation zone and specific area plans. But in our midst, there is a burning housing crisis. There is a fire in the reception area of this business, and that is that housing and rents are unaffordable, and we have at our disposal levers that we can pull. And this report asks us to do that area-specific work to say, well, we know that Brighton, for example, has a younger demographic. We know that Hobart City Council area has a much more inner-city residential. We know that these are different areas, so it's not enough to just say, let's leave it to Legat or leave it to some other group to talk to Kingborough's specific needs. I'm just concluding my remarks. Please, may I have 3 more minutes?
Okay, do I have a mover? I've got a mover in Councillor Midgley and a seconder in the Deputy Mayor that Councillor Cordova be granted an additional 3 minutes. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. There isn't a more convenient season to address this emergency, and I suspect that most councillors have made up their minds already as to whether or not this constitutes a significant enough emergency to take action now, or whether we should wait and deploy resources elsewhere and wait for a more convenient season. But my point is this: somewhere, sometime, someone has to take responsibility, and we know that this is a shared responsibility of which local government is included in the mix, along with state and federal. And we know that this is a catastrophe, and I don't use that word lightly. When you have young families and elderly people sleeping in cars, when you have hard-working individuals who are working hard every day for their chance at the Australian dream and they can't get ahead, then the social contract has been broken. And we, at local government level, must act with urgency. So I hope you endorse the report. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Further contributions, Councillor Antoli.
Thanks, Mayor. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you to both the proponent, Councillor Cordova, and the CEO for his response. I think it's a matter of, as someone who has worked in the homeless sector for 10 years of my professional life, I know that the housing crisis situation is important and dear to my heart. I appreciate the response from Council Officer because the affordability crisis is very much a state and federal policy issue. Interest rates, market forces that are obviously outside of Council's control, affordability. Where Council does seem to have direct influence is around planning and getting the LPS through so that our ratepayers actually have something to stand on in terms of what their future holds. I'm personally persuaded by the CEO's response. I think strategic planning resources are committed to the most important task ahead, and that's getting the LPS through, which is absolutely foundational to all future planning decisions. And having a high-performing planning team is probably, those two things combined are the most direct things that we can do to make housing affordability more affordable. We can't fund social housing, we can't control rents, we can't compel developers to build, but the levers we do have are actually being addressed right now, and I want to support the CEO's focus, which I think is spot on. And the risk of producing an impressive-looking report that delivers nothing actionable apart from nice statistics and information that really we can get from the state and the feds won't result in anything meaningful for our ratepayers. But it will see the LPS process delayed and railroaded. And that is not something that I want to experience. I want to see that knocked out, dealt with efficiently, effectively, and I do want to support the resources that are finite
to make that happen and complete the work underway. So I won't be supporting this motion, and I will be supporting the officer's recommendation.
Thank you, Councillor Ntoli. Councillor Midgley, and then the Deputy Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. I don't see that by supporting this will railroad the LPS process. I see that it will be complementary. I've also worked in the housing sector on and off over the last 30 years. Gosh, you add that up and you look at all those times, like really has it been that long time, starting, you know, at the grassroots, working, in shelters 30 years ago where you couldn't find vacancies for women experiencing family and domestic violence, to young people on the streets in Sydney. Coming to Hobart, it definitely was a different space 25 years ago, but as we know, it definitely has changed then, even then in Hobart, to get short-term accommodation for people in crisis. It was very limited. It's just stressing that we weren't having these details and advocacy conversations back then. But we are now seeing a broad range of people experiencing housing, sleeping rough, increasingly more of that in Hobart and around Kingborough, and increasingly more people with very unstable housing. I'm sure you've all seen through social media people looking for short-term rentals, moving, having to be evicted. It's just more and more and more. And housing basically, fundamentally, is a human right. It's sad that we have have to have this in our Australian society today. So I think as council, we can look at different levers. We can look at doing these reports. Reports like this can provide advocacy to state and federal government. They can provide local data, as Brighton and Hobart has done. It can then contribute to that broader conversation that Local Government Association Tasmania can have, that the broader conversation can be had to advocate. Perhaps through this research they find other areas of information and data that could then be used to advocate. I'd like to see maybe LGAT perhaps having a bit more focus in a policy area, looking at housing and looking at what local government does. So if we do some work in this, it could contribute to that as well. I understand we have a lot and very important work, and I don't think that this will disrupt that. I feel like it will add. It's beneficial that we have this data and information. We need to do something. And so at local government level, if we can do something here, that can then advocate to the state and federal level, as I said before. So I thank Councillor Cordova for putting this forward. I worry that if we don't support this, staff can always come back to us and say, look, we just couldn't get it done in 6 months if there is just way too much work. I totally understand that. But if we don't keep it on the council record, then it won't be there as a conversation. So I do believe that we do need to support this, make a plan for it. If 6 months isn't enough time, maybe we just, staff can ask, I guess, for an extension, keep it on the record, and then perhaps as well have a conversation with Local Government Tasmania and see what work they're doing in that space and hear that rumbling from local government saying, we want to do something in that space, what can we do? Maybe it is that then also that advocacy for developers to say that there is a component of social and affordable housing for every new development that happens in Kingborough. So providing a report like this keeps that kind of rumbling and that information alive. If we don't support it, then it doesn't keep that conversation alive as to what local government can do. So that's my contribution, and that's some of the points why I'll be supporting it tonight.
Thank you. Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. Well, it is pretty obvious that the state and federal governments have shirked their responsibilities when it comes to housing. So I thank Councillor Cordova and Councillor Midgley for advocating in this space. It's really good to see community advocates advocating on behalf of their community. I just have a question to the CEO. If this motion was amended rather than the 6 months, if this was to say after the LPS process had concluded, how would you feel about it then?
Bless you. CEO.
Thank you for the question. Look, there's, I guess, some of the building blocks that we need to be working on here in terms of wider strategic planning. I think, you know, the LPS has been somewhat all-consuming for us in the space for a while now. And then through the process, and we've acknowledged it through the hearings as well, there's a number of the other sort of strategic development work that we haven't got to in recent times. So these are all contributing factors that go into how we can strategically address this really significant challenge that we have, not just in Canberra, but across our wider communities in Tasmania and Australia. So my view on this is that there's a fair bit of work that we need to do. In terms of affordability levers, we have some, and you know, the examples that you've seen within Hobart and Brighton are examples of that. Are they meaningfully going to make an impact in terms of overall housing supply? I think that'll be in the margins, and we're yet to see the impact of those interventions within those communities. So yes, we will have more capacity following on from the completion of the LPS process. Is this the most efficacious response that we could have within that next time horizon? I'd need to seek some advice on that as to whether or not this particular approach would be the right thing to do next, knowing that we have a sort of backlog of other strategic planning work that we need to do here. So it would certainly be helpful in terms of that workload pressure, but I would need to take advice about what the next steps would be.
Thank you. You also get word of the night in efficacious. Deputy Mayor.
Okay, well, I'd be happy to support the motion if this was amended to say after the LPS process had concluded.
Thank you. Further contributions? Otherwise, I'll go to mine. Councillor Dean.
Sure. I will speak just because, I mean, ultimately, who's going to be against trying to address the housing crisis? But there's going to be a few names on this come the minutes that will be voting no, and I'll be one of those, but I want to make it clear that's not because I don't support us doing something. I am one of those that think that council does have a role to play, and as the CEO's pointed out, we're unsure as to what the initiatives are happening, or what the improvements will from those initiatives from, say, Brighton or Hobart will actually have, but I think it's quite clear that we can do something, and we should be doing something. We do have a statement on housing, but I admit we haven't had the resources to fully address it. But if you look at what that housing statement talks about, there are things that are ongoing all the time and don't necessarily need us to spend a whole lot of money at getting another report into how dire the situation here is. So, you know, things like considering opportunities to increase housing in Canberra when developing or disposing of council land. So, dare I say it, we had that opportunity with Kingston Park, and unfortunately a push to medium density housing there fell through, construction costs went through the roof, and we haven't been able to revisit that yet. But that is a statement, that is part of the statement that we have all agreed to as a council. Working with developers and housing providers to facilitate development. Absolutely, when those opportunities arise, and I can think of a couple in terms of the women's shelter that we've helped facilitate with our own land, that's a success story. So we are admittedly, haven't been able to dedicate the full resources to it, but we are making some progress. And I also take the point that we are absolutely stretched and all consumed by the LPS process. So I would like to think that in the future, when that is addressed, there is going to be a new council elected later this year, that a notice of motion can be brought up at any point, that I'd like to think that my personal views of this can be revisited down the track in terms of what we'd like to do, maybe not commit to spending a whole bunch of money on a report that we maybe don't need, but maybe we could have a motion that talked about having a workshop and really looking as a council about what can we do, what is working, what isn't working, and take it in an incremental an approach rather than committing now to our staff having to do a whole bunch of extra work or commissioning out at a cost to ratepayers. So I just want to make it clear, while I am not going to be supporting this notice of motion, and I don't want to speak on behalf of anyone, but I'm sure there are others that want to see us do more and want to see houses become more affordable for our ratepayers, but I don't believe this is the answer at this point. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Dean. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, very similarly to Councillor Dean, I'll be voting against the motion, but it's not because I don't believe that there is a housing issue in Kimber or a housing issue in southern Tasmania or a housing issue in Tasmania or a housing issue in Australia. There quite clearly is. And no doubt, for voting against it, it'll be said that I'm for doing nothing in relation to that issue. But nothing could be further from the truth. My view is that the best thing that this council can do in relation to housing availability and affordability is to get our house in order with respect to planning and building, where there are efficiencies that need to be made, and where we need to make it easier for people to build and live in Kingborough. That's the best thing that this council can do for housing affordability and for housing availability, and making sure that we get our planning settings right to encourage the right kind of development for Kimber going forward. They're the things that local government can do. They're the things that this council can do, that we are doing, and that we should be continuing to put the majority of our resources into doing. And we can stand out on the front lawn and shout at the clouds about the cost of construction and what inflation is doing to everyday people in Australia and in our municipality, and shout about how wages aren't keeping pace with inflation, but it's not going to do any good. They're not the things that we have control over. The things that we have control over are the things that we should be focusing on. We don't need a motion from council to focus on, because we are already doing them, and it should be the core business of council to continue to do them. The last thing I'll say is that if you shout a little bit louder, and maybe somebody in Hobart can hear you, then there continues to be a message here which I've been saying for my entire time on council, which is that while we have a city council which shirks their responsibility to housing affordability and availability by knocking back high density development in locations where it should be, we are going to continue to have a problem in the outer urban areas of Hobart, that we're left to pick up the pieces of housing availability and affordability in the greater Hobart area, and that's unacceptable. And it's not something, again, that we have any control over, but it's a message that should be heard by our neighbours loud and clear.
Thank you, Councillor Street. For my contribution, I think as others around the table have already acknowledged, we all appreciate that there is absolutely no question that there are challenges with housing affordability in Kingborough, as there are in other parts of the state. And we know that there are people in the community who are struggling to get affordable housing in this own municipality that they want to live. I thank Councillor Cordova for bringing the motion, because I appreciate that the intent of it is, a genuine desire to move from sort of strategy to action, and to have some underpinning data to support what future actions could be. But like others, I would have difficulty in supporting the motion as it's currently framed, and I do that for a couple of reasons. One is that the advice that the staff have given us about the resource implications for, it's not about cost, it's about the time that the staff would need to devote to putting together such a report. That would create significant difficulties, given that their focus at the moment is on something which is very important for future housing developments, and that is the finalisation of the local provisions schedule, because that is ultimately what will direct what can be built and where it can be built and at what scales. So in many ways, I think that is one of the most powerful tools that we have available to us as a local government in influencing housing outcomes. And so I am very conscious of the staff's advice that the timing is not right
to be diverting their time away from finalising that process. I'm also very conscious of the work that has gone on in other councils. Hobart City Council did a had a Hobart Housing Forum in December 2024 that they brought together people from within the industry. That is, you know, very current. We don't need to be reinventing the wheel. They heard from people in the sector. They heard from people within the community sector and the building sector and a whole range of people. And they have produced a report in relation to that that I think that we could draw upon, because I don't think that the issues in Kingborough are hugely different from the issues that are faced in other areas. And I also add this word of caution that others had already alluded to. We are limited with as a local government as to what we can do. We have a really important role to play in housing, but it is mainly through the planning system, and it is through our advocacy, because we know that the key drivers do sit with state and federal governments. As much as we would like to be able to solve this, we can't do that alone. So I think it does mean that we need to focus our efforts where they will have the greatest impact. The Council immediately raised the question of what the Local Government Association has done in this space. Back in 2023, they did put together a housing reference group that drew on all the work that various councils had done in relation to housing shortages and what some solutions could be. And so for members who aren't aware of it, I would urge you to look at the Local Government Housing Position Statement that was released by LGAT in November 2024, because I don't feel like we need to. This is reinvent the wheel. The wheel has already been invented, and we can draw on that and see what parts perhaps we could adopt here in Kingborough. And some of the things are, I'd like to say, relatively easy fixes. They're not necessarily relatively easy, but there are answers there. Like we need to have infrastructure contributions for development, so that it's not a question of one developer waiting until somebody else does it so that they have to pay the headworks charges. So there's a range of recommendations in that housing report that I would urge councillors to have a look at, because there are practical solutions there that potentially that we've been advocating through LGAT to the state government for many, many years now. And I will leave it at that so that I don't. But I thank Councillor Cordova for bringing the motion. Are there further contributions? No. Councillor Cordova, if you'd like to sum up.
Thank you, Mayor. The local provision schedule has been all-consuming because this council has been willing to plough hundreds of thousands of dollars and hundreds of hours of staff time, if not thousands of hours of staff time, into arguing about the landscape conservation zone and SAPs so that people in areas with no pavements and no reticulated water can subdivide. But we just don't have the time or money, apparently, to address the housing diversity in our urban areas with shop-top housing, inclusionary zoning requiring affordable housing and developments, or vertical mixed use. The housing developments of Kingborough's future, particularly because we're an ageing population, should not be all on greenfield sites gobbling up farmland and destroying subdividing native remnant vegetation. It should be near where people work and where they go to school and near the medical services that they need and where the infrastructure already exists, so that we don't have to pay to duplicate all these brand new roads and pavements when we already have existing areas that has that infrastructure. And so we're strategically setting priorities here in Kingborough, and we're doing it tonight. Brighton's Council and Hobart City Council have set their strategic priorities and they've taken action on housing incentives. But here in Kingborough, apparently it's not a strategic priority because apparently we don't have the staff time or the money, and yet we had it for those other issues that I just mentioned. So we are selecting a strategic priority tonight. We can spend time and money, hundreds of staff hours, getting independent reports for LCZ and SAPS, but we don't have enough time or money to see whether or not what Brighton or what Hobart are doing are right for us. And so when I do bring another motion to this council asking for a Hobart-style incentive scheme, how will you know whether to vote for it or against it? Where will the information be? How will we know specific to Kingborough what is right for us? Not what's right for Brighton or for Hobart, but what's right for us here in Kingborough. And the fact remains that strategic planning resources need to be allocated where the council sets that strategic priority. And this will become a strategic priority if council makes it one. And I'll be very disappointed if we don't make it a strategic priority to address the housing crisis in Kingborough tonight when we have the opportunity to do so. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. I'm going to put the recommendation now. It's moved by Councillor Cordova and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against?
Yes.
No? Okay. Division is required. All those in favour, please raise your hands. Is Councillors Cordova, Midgley and Gladewright? Those against? Is Councillors Antoli, Dean, Richardson, Street and Reet? The motion is lost. That now takes us to page 92, confirmation of minutes of items to be dealt with in closed session. It's confirmation of minutes and applications for leave of absence. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in Councillor Cordova and a seconder in the Deputy Mayor. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. So in accordance with the Council Meetings and Councillors Workshops Audio Recording Guidelines Policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease. Open session of Council adjourned. Still can't rely on that clock. 6:50. Actually, it's nearly right now. 6:58 p.m. Just about got it after daylight savings. So thank you to those who have been with us this evening and who have also been watching along on YouTube. Good night.